Hi everyone, it's Lydia here. I think as we get to our 30s, our mid-30s and beyond, there's this preconception that we had which starts to unravel. And that is this idea of being the career woman. And I, for anyone listening or watching, that is heavily in quotation marks. It's this idea that because you can, you should rise to the top and smash the glass ceiling. And that actually it's almost our honour or our obligation that we should do that as women, because the women who came before us weren't always able to do that. And it comes with all these notions of, you know, you can have it all and you can be the career woman and you can be the mum and you can be this and that and everything. And I think as we get into our mid-30s, maybe before, maybe after for some people, we really start to call into question this idea of you can have it all. I think firstly, we think, is that actually any truth in that whatsoever? Is it possible? What would that formula look like? Secondly, we start thinking, okay, if we're going to be this person rising to the top of the ladder, when are we supposed to do that by exactly? Should I have achieved that by now? Am I close enough to where I should be? Am I on the journey? Whatever. And then there's, do we actually want that? Like, do we want that mission of getting to the top? And if so, at what sacrifice? Because everything comes with sacrifice, right? Everything is a choice. And there's always a counteraction to every action. So we're often questioning, like, yeah, if I do want to go after that career, what's that going to look like for me? And how will that impact the other aspects of my life? Some of you listening will know this, but probably a lot of you won't. But I actually personally sacked off my kind of going up the ladder, the kind of corporate career, quite early in my own career. Much earlier, actually, than I thought I would. I really thought that I'd be going up and up and up and kind of getting towards that C-suite. But when I was working in advertising, I was looking around at the C-suite and thinking, I actually don't want that career at all. So I took a sidestep and went into startups and very much drank the Kool-Aid of, okay, this is exciting. This is ambition, actually. Like, I don't want to be part of the C-suite. Like, I want to be the one. I want to be the CEO of that startup, the one that everyone's paying attention to. And don't get me wrong, I've talked about this before. It was very much ego-driven. But that was then where I started to focus. But then the same kind of thing happened. I started looking around at the CEOs and I thought, that actually looks like a lot of sacrifice and more sacrifice than I'm personally willing to give. I don't think I want my whole life to revolve around my work in that way. But sometimes I definitely think about that alternative life of what it would have been if I hadn't sacked off the kind of classic career so early. And if I had really risen to the top, I'd probably be earning a lot more money than I do now. I'd probably have a lot more recognition than I do now. I think there's a lot of benefits of being in a really big structure and kind of working your way to the top. And I sometimes do just let my mind wander to what would that life have been like? In today's episode, we sit down with Taz. She is a chief digital officer at a major UK bank. So she really is top tier, successful career woman. And she'll say herself that that very much is how people would describe her and how she's described herself for many, many years. She was raised by a single mum and she's really exceeded, I think, what she probably thought she was able to do, but what people would have expected from her as well. She's incredibly successful in her job and she's the epitome of someone who lifts as she climbs. She really thinks about women and bringing them on the journey of success that she's been able to take. She's also a woman, right? And she's a woman from an ethnic minority background. So there's all these layers of added expectation and that not only does she have to lift as she climbs, but she has to represent certain groups of people as she does that as well. She's almost like a spokesperson for success in the different demographics that she touches. She's also five steps ahead, which I found so interesting, is that when we were talking, and even in our pre-chat, she talked about building generational wealth. And I was like, God, that's something I've never even honestly thought about. And I think it's such a reflection of how she sees the world and the obligations that she feels to help others, and a real recognition of how fortunate that she's been in her own career journey. But honestly, the question that I had in the first time I spoke to her was just like, but how do you do this? I kind of said to her, like, Taz, you must be exhausted. Like, you're going back to back to back. Even when she came into film, she's going straight off to somewhere else. She's having a call downstairs. Like, she is a busy woman. And it just got me thinking, like, this is incredible. And I'm sure you're so proud of yourself. And so is everyone around you. And how do you make enough time for you? What is the sacrifice in this situation? And this is what we get into in this story. This is Taz's story. I think you're going to really enjoy it. Maybe you're on that career step by step up the ladder grind. Maybe you're already at the top like Taz is, or you're looking there and you kind of want to hear from someone who's a little bit more ahead than you on what you can expect, what that experience is like, and what it's been like for her. If you've ever felt a little bit exhausted from the pressure of your career, or maybe you're listening to this and thinking, oh, actually, maybe I could lift a little bit more as I climb, and maybe there is a way that I could take my success and branch out to other people, then this is the episode for you. But that's enough of me yapping. Let's get into it. If life feels like a whirlwind of clarity and confusion, pull up a chair. Welcome to The Weird Years. Well, Taz, welcome to the beige couch.
Thanks. Very beige.
It is very beige. Everything here is very beige, apart from the chat, hopefully.
Nah.
But very excited to have you. I actually thought it was going to take longer to get you locked in because you're a busy, busy woman.
I am. But do you know what? I'm going on holiday in a couple of weeks and I was just like, we had such a good chat when we were catching up. I was like, this is going to be easy. And yeah, my PA's on holiday. So I just took upon myself to find the time.
Right. And I feel like your approach to planning from what we've chatted about so far is like you just throw everything in there.
Yeah, pretty much everything all at once, all the time. But that's the ADHD, right? Like, that's it. It's just like, how many more things can you throw at yourself in one go?
Yeah. To kick off, I think it'd be good just to let the listeners know what you do for work.
Yeah. So I work in banking. I've been in banking for, God, as long as I've been working. And I basically work in running digital channels for like a large bank in the UK. So that's all things from how customers use their app and do their day-to-day banking to all the kind of new and innovative features that we want to move them into and get them using. So yeah, it's quite exciting. I've been a year into that role. I've done loads of other roles. Got like a team that's quite big, like, you know, a few hundred people. I love it. Like, it's hard. Yeah. And like, I work in corporate, so you could say that. Do a bit of tech, a lot of strategy, a lot of transformation. So yeah, very, very busy. And probably one of those like people that people go, oh, that's a career woman. Like, that's probably been the label for me.
Right.
So yeah, which I think is probably fair, but I've struggled with a little bit anyway over time.
Okay, tell me about that.
So I think, maybe like three. So I've been at the bank that I'm at like for 3 years. And before I was there, I worked there before actually, and then I left. I went to go and do some new stuff. And then I took a career break for a bit for a number of reasons. I kind of left a job and I took 3 months out. I have never done that in my life. I've been working since I was 16 and I'm one of those September babies. Right. So, you know, like, you're the oldest in the year.
Yeah.
I was working in year 11 of school, right? JD Sports, great job. Learned how to lace trainers in many ways. But I think first time I'd stopped. And then I was like, shit, who am I? And I had that moment of like, why is work such a big part of my identity? And it always has been. And everybody who knows me will talk about me, in most cases, will say something about what I do for work.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, do you know Taz? Like, she's got this job. Or even, I think even the way my mum might describe me, right? I think they'd say, yeah, where I work, what I do, or how my career's been and the stuff I've done. And that's not problematic. I'm really proud of it. But I think I was having a bit of a moment going, is that what I want people to say about me?
Right.
And I just got married, you know, so that was a whole identity crisis anyway, because I'd always been like single girl, moved to London, living my life. So I just got married. And then I was trying to figure out my identity, but almost came to the conclusion that work is what I do, not who I am. And that was hard. But it took me those 3 months of like doing nothing and just watching Friends at 11 a.m. most days and sitting there just checking in with myself going, am I comfortable with that? And I don't still think I've cracked it, but I am more comfortable that there is more about me than my job.
Yeah, I think that's such a trap for like ambitious women. I mean, even like the term ambitious women, it's like it becomes a label that people stick on you. Like when I was in startups, it was the same with me. All my friends would be like, oh yeah, you're like the tech startup person.
Yeah, that's
your thing. It's like, you're really ambitious. And then you have to sit with yourself and be like, wait, why am I like that? Why do you think, is it like inherent to you that you just love working? Or where does that like go, go, go career approach come from?
Yeah, I think it's crazy, right? Because if you're successful and you're a woman, people go, oh, they're a career woman or they're really ambitious. They put that label on you. There's a million men doing it and we don't say that about them.
We've literally never had career man. I've actually, yeah, never.
Yeah, like, so we don't have career man and then we have stay at home mom.
Mm-hmm.
So like, oh, she's a home, like, so it's always about like what women choose to do. And like for me, I've just had that work ethic since I was young, right? Like I worked super, super hard from a very young age. And I think that honestly comes from like a scarcity mindset. It's like growing up with a single mom, like we didn't have a lot when we were growing up, you know, like money was tight. Like money was really, really tight. And I'm the eldest. And so me and my mom would talk about that, right? I remember like just literally being in Asda and going, I'm not going to ask for that toy because I don't think we've got the money.
Oh, yeah.
And when my siblings, like I've got some like really core memories of like my siblings going, oh, I want that. I'm like, don't ask mom for that. She doesn't have enough money.
Right.
And I never wanted my mom to hear me say that. And now, you know, it's amazing the things that I've been able to do for my mum as a result of like where I've got to through work. But I think that scarcity mindset just showed me like I need to do more. And it wasn't to prove anything to anyone. It was for me. And so I wanted to work hard, not to be successful, to make a different life.
Okay.
It was never about reaching the top. I never had the dream to be where I am now. This was never
what like... What was the dream?
I don't think I had one. Yeah. I can't remember. I remember reading like The Twits and going, I'm going to be an author. Then I read Matilda and I was like, yeah, definitely going to be an author.
Nice.
Then I wanted to be a doctor, you know, like seven, like most Indian kids do. And then I was like, I wanted to be a journalist. I just kind of ended up here, right? Through circumstance. But I definitely had a scarcity mindset and I wanted different for me and I wanted different for my family. And I was absolutely committed to giving my mom a different life. I just saw her work so hard for us and she's a young mom, right? And I was just like, that can't be great. Like, I don't want her to have to scrimp and save. So from as young as I could afford to, you know, helping her with the mortgage, helping her with like debts and like now, like she lives comfortably, I think. I hope she'd say that. You know, I can do loads of nice things for her. I just never wanted us to run out again. And so that's just become innate in me.
Did your mum, like, obviously she discussed these things with you, you said, but did she ever say to you, like, you have to work hard because you have to get an education, you have to get better? Or was it something you just, like, picked up on?
Do you know what? I think she did say that to me. And I remember, actually, I've got some, like, it's going through my head now, some really core memories of, like, she was like, I don't want you to end up where I have. So she, you know, she's a powerhouse, right? My mom. And she like left school without any GCSEs. And she has struggled, right? And she still works and she's very good at what she does. Like we always talk about like how good she is and how passionate she is. Got the gift of the gab, right? But she found out later in life that she's dyslexic. So I think like she's had her own struggles. And I never knew that when I was young.
Right.
I didn't know all of these things about my mom because they try and protect you, right?
Yeah.
And we go on holiday every year. So every year for her birthday, I take her away. And like, you know, it's just me and her. It's the only time we get alone.
That's so nice.
And we share secrets right now because like she'll tell me stuff about her life and I'll tell her stuff and we'll have like a good goss and a good chat. And it's the only time we can do it without all the siblings and her other grandkids. I'm learning more about her. And I think what it has kind of taught me is why she said those things to me. Don't go through what I've been through. Don't turn out like me. Don't try and take the hard way. There was a school behind our house, right? Anybody who knows me and knows where I'm from, there was a school behind our house. And she was like, you're not going there. So I used to get on a bus to school in a different area, right?
Because she thought it was like a rough school or...
Yeah, and like the area that we grew up in is still what would be classed statistically as like socially deprived, right? That's where we live though. So she wanted me to go to a different school. I went to a different school. Like she always wanted me to like get good results. I was a smart kid. And she would be disappointed when I didn't do well as well, right? Also very proud when I did do well. But never like, you must do this with your career. You know, a lot of in communities that I'm from historically, it's not like that now. Would go and be a doctor, go and be, I don't know, a pharmacist, go and be an optometrist, whatever, whatever. My mom never said that to any of us. She's like, go and do what makes you happy, right? But she also just said, like, go and think about like what would help you out in your life. And we all have done really well for ourselves. But yeah, she definitely wanted me to do better, I think, than her.
What do you think, like, the definition, or how did you think of success when you were younger? Was it purely financial, or what was... What
financial.
Would you, yeah.
Yeah. Not having to worry about the bills.
Mm.
Not having to worry about food on the table. I still don't know what I think success is, maybe. Mm. A lot of people will say to me, I'm successful, and I still struggle with that. I think factually I can say I'm successful, yeah, right, on paper, look at it statistically. But I wouldn't go around saying I'm a successful woman if I wasn't talking about it as a fact. Mm. But actually, I am a success story from where I've come from and where I am now. And I think success was all about just having... It wasn't about having more money. It was having enough money.
Yeah.
So it was about stability, not about greed. I don't sit there and go, I want to earn this much money. I think about how much can I have to cover what we need to cover in our lives, like me and my partner. Can I provide financially for my mum? If my siblings need anything, my mum needs anything, can I do that? Holidays, emergencies, I cover all of those things. And then, okay, savings, investments, pensions and all of that, right? I've got a financial advisor, so now I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
But those things weren't a thing before it was just enough to pay the bills.
Yeah. It's so interesting because that, like, I always think about that. I think I've even mentioned it on the pod before. There was a bank who had an advert that was like, your relationship with your money starts as young as 6, I think they
said.
Yeah,
correct, yeah.
And I thought that was so interesting because I think I had quite a different upbringing in that, like, we were always really comfortable. I had absolutely no awareness of money, like, until I went to university, or, like, you know, I had a job from when I was 14.
Yeah.
But it was very much like, so I could go into Brighton and screw around and buy stupid posters and, you know, spend money in HMV or whatever it was at the time. And I think there's a really interesting thing that as you go more and more into, like, people who grew up with wealth, the thing I've always struggled with is, like, there's an element of grit missing. And it sounds like from your story is, like, you do so much, and it's almost like that grit of, like, knowing how to suffer but how to, like, get through it is really, really ingrained in you.
100%. Like, I do, you know what, I've used the word grit so many times over, like, work stuff, but I probably haven't used it to describe me, and I do think I've got a lot of grit. The way I get shit done, even in my work, comes from grit.
Yeah,
it's like I'm a powerhouse of, like, just pushing shit through that you can't believe can be done right. Like, that's my approach.
Mm.
I'm just like, if not me, then who? I say to my team, if not us, then who?
Mm.
Don't tell me why it can't be done. Tell me how we can do it. Tell me what it would take. And then I always say to my team, put me to work. I'll go have the fights.
Yeah.
And that's my approach, because everything is about grit. And I do sometimes wonder if that's going to just exhaust me at some point in my life.
Mm.
Because you don't need to have grit all the time. And I think the only place I don't need to have grit is in my marriage.
Mm.
Like, I don't have to have grit there. I've married, like, a really calm, chill guy who thinks about things. We're completely opposite in that way, right? We're absolutely aligned on values and morals and how we show up. We like the same music. We like the same TV shows, you know, 80% of the time. But actually, I don't need grit. It's the first time, and I struggled with it. I struggled a lot in the early parts of our relationship, especially when we started living together and stuff, of being able to not have grit and be vulnerable. So he's like 6'2", right? And I'm tiny. I'm 5'2". And I'd put stuff on top shelves. And then he would, like, sometimes come in and see me climbing on a chair and then, still not tall enough, climb on the worktop to get stuff. And he's like, why don't you just ask me? I was like, I'm not used to asking anyone for stuff. Because grit isn't just about how you go to work, right? It's just how you, like, I've got this.
Yeah.
And it hyper-independence as well.
For sure.
And then I was like, I don't like asking anyone for stuff. And he was like, but I'm your husband. I was like, still.
Mm.
And it took ages. But if we have an argument or, like, even a bicker about what do we want to eat or what do we want to go watch on TV, which is the only thing we ever talk about, really, I will then not ask him to get something down from the top shelf for a few weeks, because then it's almost taken my... it's almost taken me back to a place where I need to be hyper-independent again. And it could just be like, I don't want to eat salmon today. But that then is like, and that's a whole me problem. So I think, like, needing grit in all situations in my life is completely innate in me because of my upbringing. But it can be at the detriment of you. But you can learn to unlearn it.
Yeah.
And I've unlearned it in my marriage. And it's the only way for my marriage to be successful. So I'm absolutely firm in my views, you know, have an opinion. I'm opinionated. He's stubborn. I think I say that to him. He would agree sometimes. but I don't need to have grit there. I have grit still everywhere else, even with my family.
Mm. It's so interesting. My coach, Lauren, who's also been on the podcast, she always talks about that sometimes when things start to feel a little sticky, you need to lean to like the other energy, because she's also a very grit driven person. And I've always said I'm a bit of like a quitter, probably because I've always had that, like, you know, my family's always gone like, oh, you wanted to play guitar and you don't like it anymore. That's fine. Don't worry. It was always like,
yeah,
there was an abundance to the point of there was never like a, you know, you have to do this because you won't get to the next place. It's like, well, if you don't do that, you'll do something else, you know.
Mm.
And I think I love, Lauren always talks about like leaning into the other energy, because a lot of the people I have coaching with, they're like very, very grit driven. And she's always like, if you're grit driven, you need to learn to like give away sometimes a little bit more power and not have to hold everything so close.
Yeah.
Versus if you're someone who's a little bit more on the relaxed side and you need a bit of fire under your ass, you need to try and find that grip from somewhere.
Yeah, do you know what? And that is so true. And that's probably like taking that career break just showed me it's not that deep.
Mm.
Like nothing ever is really. So, and it was like around the time I'd got married and stuff as well, right? So I was learning to have less grit. I wasn't working. And as I've gone back to work, there's definitely things I really care about. But what I've done is surrounded myself with people I trust.
Yeah.
So in the same way that I'm married to someone I trust and I don't have to have grit with, right? And so I'm like, I've definitely got grit and force with the things I need to. But on certain things, I'm like, you got this, right?
Mm.
And you can afford to then take a step back on stuff. For me, though, it's about having that trusted network. And my mum actually always says it to me, especially with the way I show up with my siblings. I'm like the eldest. And I'm like, I always feel the need to keep everything together, including the family unit.
Right.
And my mum's like, you just got to let things go sometimes. I'm like, sorry, what?
Like, are you going to step in?
Yeah. But yeah, I think 100%, like if you constantly are always about grit, you only exhaust yourself.
Mm, and you always, I guess, you don't always take the easier route for yourself. It's like there could be a way that you make this easier because you're used to the struggle. You kind of look for the way to make it harder for yourself sometimes.
Yeah, but like controversially, right? People who have grit are normally the people who are expected in their friendship groups and their families, sometimes in relationships, right? At work, to like make the decisions, to call the shots.
Mm.
I have so much decision fatigue.
Mm.
And I think sometimes when you are the person that has grit and then everybody around you is maybe not like that or cares a little bit less, you sometimes don't get the opportunity to not have grit.
Right, because people expect it from you.
Yeah, so I was talking to, again, someone at work, right? And she's like really successful. And she was saying to me, she was like, I went on holiday with my family and they were like, we'd get the menu and they're all looking at me like, how do you want to do this? And I'm like,
wow.
But that happens when we go for birthday meals with my family, right? They're all like, oh, how should we order? I'm like, you guys have been out before, right? Like, what do you want to do? Is there something you really fancy? Should we get some sharing stuff? You choose.
Mm.
Sometimes even like planning things, it'll be like, oh, they're the planner, they're the people that get shit done.
Yeah.
And that can be quite hard. Now, in my friendship groups, I've got a lot of people with grit around me in some of my friendship groups.
Mm.
So it's never really like that. And my family are all grit individually, but sometimes when I show up, it is like, where are we going for so-and-so's birthday? Sometimes even for my own.
Mm.
And I'm like, guys, are you kidding me? I've got to organize my own birthday meal in the city that you all live in. Like, right? And I say this to them. So I do think that having the person with grit around you, everybody else kind of defaults to, well, they're the decision maker, they're the person to go to. So you can't really chill.
Yeah. Have you heard of emotional labor tax?
Yes. I read about this all the time. I read about it all the time.
It's such a true thing. And for anyone listening who hasn't heard of that, it's essentially, it generally falls to women, but it's like the soft skills of organizing and decision making in your life. So it's things, as you said, someone's birthday's coming up. This often happens in marriages.
Mm-hmm.
It's their parents' birthday. Mm-hmm. What are we going to do for the birthday? Have mm-hmm. you sent a card? Or it's one of the kids' friends' birthday party. Who's going to get them a present? Where are we going? And it's all those like micro decisions, which are actually, if you paid someone like an assistant to do, it's time consuming stuff. And as you said, it's a decision fatigue. 100%. And that's the tax that a lot of women take on for keeping the group together.
Yep.
And this person hasn't spoken to this person. Can't have that. I need to get them in a room.
I'm that person.
Are you?
So
the mediator.
Hard. Yeah. Like, well, like I need everything to be okay in certain mm-hmm. scenarios. I find that really difficult. But yeah, like this whole like mental load that we carry.
Yeah.
I read something about it being like the unseen and mm-hmm. the like unvalued load that we carry is hard. And like, look, I'm really lucky. Like my husband is great like that. He doesn't remember everything. Like last night, his family's all coming for dinner tonight, right? And my mum's coming over tonight. And I said to him, did you invite your sister? And he went, oh no, shit, I forgot. And I was like, can you text her? And I was like, why? And I was like, because you've got one sibling here. We've invited your mom and your uncle and aunt. Can we please invite your sister? He was like, oh. And I was like, do it, please. I don't want to look like I've excluded her.
Yeah.
Because we haven't. But I'd really like you to invite her over. I was like, all right then. Just like, just please think for yourself.
Yeah.
But on most things he does right. I just think that those things get caught up and they're so hard. And I was doing a keynote speech at this thing for work, right, recently on AI. And the organizer said, oh, we're asking every speaker to tell us what their one wish would be for the future. And I think because of my job, they expect me to say something really profound. And I was like, I want someone who does everything I need to do in my life without me asking them to do it. All the way from, I've got a brilliant PA, right? Like she literally is the boss of me. She's on holiday at the moment. And like, she's great. I've got a brilliant team around me at work. My husband's great. But then they're still like, organize the dinner for my sister's birthday or make sure my nephew's work experience sorted or, I don't know, like hang out with my niece and figure out like whatever's going on. Just little things I need to think about that I just want someone to think about for me.
Yeah.
And then I don't just want them to think about it. I want them to action them. I want the birthday card with the cash in it in my house, packed up, written and ready by the door for when we leave. Do you know what I mean? Like, just take the whole thing and automate the shit out of it.
It's also so funny because I think if you had this conversation, well, firstly, it wouldn't go into this conversation if I had a really successful man sitting on the couch. Like, it just wouldn't come up in conversation. But often when you do hear people press successful men on, like, you know, how do you do this? It is always because they have a whole team of people around them and like a wife who picks up all of this mental load. Yeah. I actually remember hearing a story of, I can't remember, it was in a magazine somewhere. It was this, I think it was a sister of someone. There was a woman whose sister had passed away and the husband had basically realized, like come to her and had this like epiphany of like, I don't know how to deal with life. Like, how am I supposed to cook and clean and do all of these things? And it was only when she was gone that he realized that he had to like replace her, quotations. Obviously you can't replace her, but the role that she played in his life was so multifaceted without him even realizing.
That's so hard, isn't it? Like, how many people just learn to do stuff because of women around them? And look, I have a brilliant team of people around me, right? You know, a lot of parents talk about their village. I think I've got a village around me and like my team at work. Like, I have a close unit of people that just are definitely one of the biggest reasons that I can do the things I do, right? They're like, that they're everything. And I've got a great husband, like Sheb, my husband, who always says to me, if I don't remind you to eat, would you eat? And I'm like, obviously what I've learned since my diagnosis is like, because of ADHD, I can definitely forget to eat when I'm hyperfixated. So when he's at home, he's like, have you had lunch? And I'm like, you don't need to worry about this. Like, when you're not here, I do eat. He was like, do you? I'm like, kind of, yeah.
You're like,
I'm trying to get better, right? But he will literally like make sure that I'm okay most of the time, right? And then he'll say sometimes, he's like, I have to carry the load of making sure you eat. And I was like, but you don't.
Yeah.
I don't need you to do that. And he was like, but I want to, like, you're my wife. And I'm like, yeah, but like, I'll be all right.
Like, which I wonder is if that's how other people would feel of like, you know, organising your sister's birthday meal, whether someone else would pick it up if you put it down.
Is that, I just feel like, oh, we have to do something. We have to keep it together. And I feel like that burden on me. And I'm sure they would all do it, right? But I think also, I think they know that I like doing it. I don't know if I love doing it all the time, but I want to make sure it happens. Yeah. I want to make it nice. I want it to be fun. I want to make sure nobody's worried about how much it's going to cost or, you know, I'm the only one that has to really travel, right? Everyone else is in the same city. So like, I'm just like, okay, I'll take it upon myself to find a date that works, make sure it's kid friendly for everyone, make sure like the price are fine, you know, da, 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 da.
So, do you think there's like an element of guilt being in down in London when all your family are somewhere else?
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. And I think like, I've been here like 11 years, right? And I never came here thinking I was going to live here. I never thought I was going to not live here. I just didn't have a view, right? And before that, I'd like lived abroad. And I remember leaving home that day, and like, you know, that moment with my mum, that again is like etched into me. It was the best thing for our relationship. And it's also been like the best thing for me. But I think I felt it more when my mum got ill. So a few years ago, my mum got diagnosed with breast cancer. Like, she's obviously my only parent. And I just realised that if anything happened to her, like, we would have no parents. And as the eldest, I just felt like a whole big pressure. Mm. When my anxiety started, I started getting, like, really bad anxiety, you know, like, physically sick, like, that kind of stuff from just the worry. And I think that's when I started feeling really guilty that I just couldn't be with her all the time.
Mm.
She lives alone. Like, I worry about that. Like, most times I'll wake up in the middle of the night and I'll be like, I wonder if she's okay. When I'm at her house, she has told me to actually piss off because I'll open the door and check she's breathing. Like, that's how bad my anxiety got after she got cancer. It's better now. I had to have a lot of therapy to deal with it after she got ill. My nan got really ill last year and my nan was like really pivotal in raising us while my mum went to work. And so I feel like I can't help enough. So I do try and go down, like, I'll go and stay. I'll go and stay at my nan's. I'll go and stay at my mum's. My siblings want me to go and stay with them and their kids. And I'm like, no, I'm going to prioritise mum. I'm going to prioritise nan. So there's guilt, but I think more than guilt, it's just worry. I just constantly worry.
Yeah. I wonder if there's also, like, a layer into this of coming from an ethnic minority background. There's also maybe, like, this layer of expectation of community and family that is probably, whenever I hear about, like, friends who, you know, come from different backgrounds, they seem to have so much more reliance on each other and so much more of, like, expectation to be there.
Mm-hmm. And look, it's, and I think the expectation to be there has definitely changed. Like, no one in my family is definitely saying come over all the time. I've put that pressure on me because I'm trying to keep that unit together.
Yeah,
that's a me thing, right? And I know that that's a me thing.
Mm.
But I think more so in ethnic minority families, if you think about when people came over in their first generation, so my nan, as an example, she didn't come over with her sister or her mom. English wasn't her first language. So she came over when she was like, I think 15, 16. She's in her 70s now. And again, she is like I'm raised by very, very strong women, right? Like, proper powerhouses. Everybody in the community would know her.
Yeah.
Everyone knows her. Because when you don't have a mum and you don't have a sister or a dad or whatever, you don't speak the language, you find community.
Yeah.
And so the person next door and the person who lives opposite, and those people become your friends. And I remember growing up at my nan's, where the guy next door was Jamaican. There was a lady three doors away who was Irish. Mm. The guy next door was like Indian, but where's turban Sikh guy, like, he's still there. And they were just like a unit. There was like a Bangladeshi woman opposite. There was like another lady opposite. Like, and they were all the community. So they all came from different countries. They spoke different languages, but had something in common that united them.
Yeah.
And look, we call anybody in the community uncle or auntie. So it's like, you don't call people by their names. Right. It's all of that kind of respect. Because you don't know what favours they've done. The village was always bigger than the immediate family.
Mm.
It's like, people just bring over food. So my nan wasn't well. There's like ladies all around the area that would just be dropping off food every day. And I remember calling my aunt. She's like, the doorbell has not stopped fucking going. Like, what is going on? She's like, people just keep sending food. Got nowhere to put it.
Oh,
that's community, right? Like, that's how we are. And it's changing our generation.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
Like, me and my husband don't have that.
Mm.
Like, I don't talk to the neighbours. I'm awkward, like, with new people. Like, I'll socialise when I have to, but I, like, can go quite introverted.
Mm.
Like, when we moved into the house and they saw us for the first time, he was getting out of the car. He's like, come out. And I was like, nope. I was like, get out of the car. And I was like, He went over and he shook their hands and I was like, waving. He was like, that's my wife, Taz, come out. And I was like, hello. I'm like that. I don't have that wider community, but we have friends, right?
Yeah.
That's what we have. Whereas I think so, expectation you can put on yourself, but that wider community you do a lot with, and you do kind of turn up to things. Asian weddings used to be like 600-700 people, right? That go on for days. Now they're much smaller because the people that you can afford to spend time with has changed. Life's just busier.
Yeah.
And in our generation, I can go like 4 months without seeing my friends. Because they live in different countries.
Mm.
You know, my friend's in America. She's getting married in a couple of weeks. I'm going to go to a wedding. But we'll have seen each other like 3 times in a year.
Yeah.
My friends have had babies. They've moved away from London. You know, we live really far apart. So that can happen with some friendships. And so when life's busy, you can't fit in a whole other community.
Mm.
And so communities get smaller and tighter by nature.
Yeah, it's also like the playing with digital channels, isn't it? Is that you... Friends who previously would move away and maybe like that friendship kind of ends, you FaceTime. Keep what you FaceTime, you talk, and then it's like you don't necessarily have space in your life for the people who are
next door or 100%, down the road.
100%. I literally find it really hard to keep up with friendships generally because life's just busy. And it's not because it's busy, like, and I'm doing anything exciting most of the time. It's just busy where I'm trying to rest, actually.
Mm.
I'm prioritizing. Like, my brain is busy all the time. Work's busy. My head works differently. So then I'm trying to prioritize downtime. Right. I'm trying to prioritize my marriage, you know, where I just don't want us to sit on our phone scrolling with, like, friends on in the background. So, you know, we'll eat at the dining table, we'll have a chat, we'll watch something together, we'll go and spend time together on the weekend. I need time to exercise.
Yeah.
That's a priority over anything, right?
Mm.
So then, like, there's a whole long list of things that get just harder to manage.
Yeah. It's funny, when we did our kind of pre-chat call, that was like the feeling. I remember at one point I just said to you, like, when do you have time? Like, do you do anything for you? Like, not to maintain the marriage or to maintain this, like, just for you to just turn off?
I exercise. That's my thing, right? So, like, so tonight we've got, like, everyone coming over for dinner. But I booked on a 6-week course for, like, reformer.
Mm.
And I was saying to my husband, oh, maybe I won't go because everyone will be here and it'll be rude. He was like, no, I'm going to drop you. I just go. It's like the 5th week. Like, got to go, right? I had to miss a couple of weeks ago because I was at this charity dinner. But I'm going to go. So exercise for me is, like, my time for me. Yeah, it's my non-negotiable. When I don't fit it in, I can feel it more mentally than physically. It's great for my ADHD. It really calms me. So, yeah, like, we've got a gym down the road. We pay, I pay a stupid amount for it because, like, my husband doesn't go. He goes for free when at work now. But I like it. Like, it's got a spa there. I can do everything I want to do there. That's always my time. I don't completely switch off when I'm there. Like, I might be catching up with my friends and texting them. Sometimes, actually, now I've started listening to podcasts. But, like, I might be thinking about new ideas for, like, things like Office Real Talk. Like, just there's always something going on in my brain. But that is my time. That is for me. And my morning routine is sacred. Like, that is for me.
Do you feel also, like, I was reading about this phenomenon or observation that they call, like, the model minority. Have you heard of this?
No, but I think I know what you're going to say.
You're like, I don't need this to be explained to me. But for people listening, it's essentially this idea that when you come from a minority background, it's not enough to succeed for you. You have to succeed to be, like, the person in a new field because you're doing it for everyone else who hasn't had exposure to it.
I've felt that my whole life.
Really?
And I feel it so much. And I feel like people can put you on a pedestal, and so it's hard to get it wrong. Which means sometimes it's hard to be human. But I don't really care too much about that. I will think about things a couple of times over. I don't make that too much of a thing. But I definitely feel that it's a responsibility and a burden. And I remember being on this course once, and there was about 50 of us there, like, all very senior people. And I met another Asian lady there and a black lady there. And we just kind of ended up being in, like, everybody was chatting and we just kind of chatting to each other. And we literally had that conversation. It just kind of came out of, like, because we're so senior, everybody who wants a career chat with me normally is either a woman or of a minority. Sometimes white men want to have career chats with me. And that's, like, obviously I've got them in my team. They're great. I just had one with someone now, actually, who's a white guy. He's great. But more than often, it's women. And it's people from minority backgrounds. They want to talk to me because they see me and they're like, actually, that person can help me, or I can relate to them or whatever. But I feel the need to represent them. I feel the need to talk on their behalf. I feel the need to advocate for them. When I'm sitting at leadership tables where I'm still the only person that looks like me sometimes, if I'm not going to advocate for them, then who?
Yeah.
Do you know what really pisses me off? When people who are in those positions of power do not advocate for others. So we had a really random conversation the other day, and this was it was really insightful. Me and my leadership team were kind of sitting together and we were chatting about kind of holidays and school holidays and stuff like that. And we were talking about the fact that they're different in, like, different locations. So, like, you know, just in the UK, they're different in different places.
Right.
Scotland starts really early. And I said, if we want to be truly inclusive, to, like, parents with families, we're going to have to think about how we play this. And we were, like, you know, we were talking about, like, you know, just making sure, like, there's appropriate time to have, like, flexibility and stuff like that. But ultimately, being inclusive is always about the people who have already been there. I don't think everybody can really imagine what it is to be inclusive of a certain type of person if they're not that type of person. I think you can have empathy.
Right.
I don't think you can really do it.
So it's like, regardless of this thing being an unfair pressure, it's like there's not really, you know, if we're thinking about holidays, let's say I was in a position of power thinking about holidays, I'm not going to think about Ramadan or Diwali because they're not communities. Like, I don't know anything about it. So you have to have that person in the room. And then inevitably they take on way more responsibility for everyone else than someone who doesn't have that would.
Yeah. And look, and you might think about that, right? You could, like, I've got people around me who do think about those things. I've got friends around me from like different cultures who are like, oh, it's Ramadan. Like, do you definitely want to come out? Like, oh, sorry, you won't be able to make it. Let's go out at this time for dinner. I've got guys at work now who will think like that, like white men from like very, very like different backgrounds who will now say, oh, should we go out in the evening for dinner? Like, because it's Ramadan and whatever. I think that's great. But I do think you can't truly feel what it is. I'm not a mum and I'm not working as a working mum. I can only imagine to comprehend what that would be like.
Yeah.
But I can't truly.
Yeah.
And so I do have a lot of great mums around me who talk about that, who help me think about some of the things just in the engagements I have with them. But until that is me, I will truly not be able to understand it, right? And what it means. It's how people do fast for a day. I love it. Like, fasting for a day, and it's great. And it was really hard. I'm like, Yeah, but like, we're doing it for 30 days. We're going to do it every year. Like, it's hard. But like, when you get to the end of it, your body and your brain, like, you, it's a great thing and it's super rewarding. But you're also like physically just like, I need a minute.
Yeah.
And it takes you a minute to then readjust back, right? It's all that kind of stuff. You learn from talking to people from different places. But until you go through some of these experiences, I think it's hard to be really, really inclusive.
Yeah.
And that's why diversity of thought, diversity of friendship groups, just knowing different people in your circle.
I think it's interesting what you're saying of, you know, you have to represent for other people. And then there also seems like, when you look at how the media treats people from minority backgrounds, that there's also, you can't put a foot wrong. I think like Simone Biles is an amazing example of like, she's like the greatest of all time in terms of gymnastics. Like, on paper, in every single way, she's the greatest athlete of all time in terms of gymnastics. But when she, I think it was Paris, where she really, like, she had what they call the twisties, where like you can't kind of place yourself in the air, and had to drop out of some of the team routines. And the way that she was treated, because it was like, well, you've let down, like, being a black athlete, like, you've now not done it for everybody else, even though that happens to athletes. Like, sometimes you have to drop out of things. It's like the burden is bigger in the first place, and then not making it is even bigger.
It's like you can't afford to fail.
Mm.
It's like you just can't afford to fail. And sometimes I think, would I give it all up? And I give it all up. Go and do something completely different, right? And by that, I don't mean about the job. I just mean like for my life. I don't know. I'm never going to be like a Pilates instructor or anything like that. Like, that isn't me. I'd love to think I could. I don't know, just be some kind of digital nomad that freelances and stuff. I think I would really struggle without some structure. But I do think about that. And then I think that'd be great for me. But I do sometimes play the alternative, which is, but then I'm removing myself from a structure and a system that doesn't really support people like me. There's more and more of us. But actually, I can really help people up. And I just, like, the quote that always sticks with me, I don't know if you know her, she's like a Polish Canadian, Rupi Kaur.
Okay.
And an Indian woman, and she writes like these poems. I've got all of her books at home. But one of the things I love that just always motivates me is like, break down the doors and bring all your people with you. And that is literally my whole thing when I'm at work. And I look around and I talk to people who have come from like socially deprived backgrounds. I look at women, I look at minorities, and I'm like, come on, doors are open, let's go. You know, I was talking to some of my gay colleagues a while ago, and they were like, we've just never really felt seen. And I'm like, it's open for you, like, let's go. Because I think that that is also my burden, right? Of like, I never want anyone to feel like they don't belong.
Yeah.
Because it's been really hard in my career. I have felt like that so many times. So many times.
Crazy. And also, you talked, like, you know, you talked previously about building generational wealth. I think it's just interesting for me hearing these conversations from someone who's young, because I always think about this stuff. And also it's the same thing of, you know, seeing someone in your position, and I look at some of my friends now and I'm like, oh my God, we're like real adults. I'm like, you're like a real adult job. And suddenly you're talking about like building generational wealth for your family and like taking your mum on holiday, and I'm like, shit, when did we get to this point?
It's deep. Like, yeah, like I have a proper adult life and I don't know when it happened. I don't feel old. Right. I'm really comfortable in who I am. I've learned to love me, flaws and all, you know, as much as I think I can. I don't feel old. I'm probably doing more of the things I should have done when I was younger now. That's nice. Because I didn't get to do them when I was younger. Because it was like hard, right? It was our anniversary the other day and we just went to Margate for the day, right? And we went on a roller coaster. And I was a bit emotional when we got off. And like my husband was like, are you all right? And I was like, yeah, just, and then we went on the bumper cars and it was just like really stupid shit.
I get to be silly.
Yeah. Like I just get to do that with him because it's so safe. Right.
Mm.
So yeah, I think like that is good that I've got that, but I've got like really big adult things to think about.
Mm.
Like the mortgage, like is just a thing to think about all the time. Right. I've got tenants.
Right.
And like when they message me, like my husband's like, are you going to message them back? And I'm like, oh shit, what do I do this? I think thinking about not just what I want to do for me, but what I want to do for everybody else with what I've been able to do and establish like financially. And the best thing that I could recommend to anybody, like doesn't matter how much you earn or what you do, like get someone who knows like how to be a financial advisor. Like I've worked in finance my whole life and I am, doesn't matter what the internet says, doesn't matter what Instagram says, doesn't matter what ChatGPT says, get someone who knows shit.
Yeah.
And I found someone actually on Instagram, Georgia, she's great. And she is like my financial advisor and she's really helped me think about my future.
Yeah.
And it's not about what I'm going to leave behind for anybody. She did say the other day, she's like, you need to do a will. I was like, yes, I know I need to do a will. But when I've not come from money, the fact that I can think about, you know, what I can do for my nieces and nephews, what I could do for my mom, for my siblings, what we would do, you know, with our house, those kind of things. Those conversations are real now.
Mm.
Those conversations are real, you know. I remember going home at Christmas. It's like, mom, give me a break. I just landed. And she's like, yeah, before anybody's here, like, can we talk about my power of attorney? And I was like, oh my God.
I've just gone through that.
Like, it's hard.
You get like 10,000 pages. My parents are divorced. It's like, different power of attorney, different people. Like, God, I don't even know what this is.
I know. And after she got sick, it became so real as well, right? And then she was like, yeah. And then like executor and all of that. And I'm like, this is deep. And then like my husband only has his mum as well. So like we've got like, we talk about that a lot.
Mm.
Like, you know, it's hard. I never want to think about loss again in my life, but like it's hard. So those problems are real. But just like, having to think about the garden. We've got AstroTurf. Why am I still thinking about the garden? Like, it's just shit. Yeah. So it's just like constant added load of like big problems. I don't know how it happened.
Yeah.
I just want to go on holidays. That's all I want
to
do.
Amen to that. I'm going away next weekend and I'm like, I literally need much. I just need fun.
Yeah, we are. We're going to Miami and then to Toronto for my friend's wedding, right? And I'm so ready. And I'm just so ready to like not care. Yeah. But I know I'm going to find myself thinking about things or like coming up with stuff in my brain. That's it.
I love this chat. And I also love it because it's such a mix of like, you know, your story and the inspiration of that and the duality of having grit. But also I think I don't think we've talked at all about like on this podcast, our success in relation to other people. I think we've been very much on our kind of self-fulfilling high horses a little bit. So thank you for bringing that to the couch. I'm going to finish this off with yes or mess segment,
okay,
which is rapid fire questions.
Mm-hmm.
We have five of them. And you answer with yes if you're like, yeah, this is a vibe, I'm into it. And mess if it's not.
Oh.
So they're kind of all over the place. Number one.
So am I.
Is teaching someone emotional intelligence yes or mess?
Yes.
Mm. Being a friend's therapist?
Yes.
Hmm. Taking a little cry break in the work bathrooms.
Mess. I can't cry at work. I'll come home and break down.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh God, I've cried at my old job.
Not in the office, at home, when I work from home maybe, yeah.
Yeah, just a little break. Or like a little stare at the ceiling for 10 minutes is also quite nice.
Every day, yes. Every day, yes.
Being a strong woman.
Yes.
Love it. And booking in me time.
Yes.
Are you going to do more of it?
Yeah, 100%. And I'm already just really excited for Miami. Spend some quality time together, then spend some time with my friend. And then my husband goes to New York for work after that. So I'm coming home. And that whole week, I will just be in the gym, in the spa.
Oh my God, isn't it heavenly? Every time my husband's away, which he is loads for work, and he's always like, but I don't ask you for anything when I'm here. I'm like, it's not even that you're asking for me. It's that I'm hyper aware of everything that you do and what's going on. And just, it's even that thing of like girl dinner. Like when your husband goes away, it's like, I'm just going to eat anything, stupid things. I'm not going to think about anything. I'm literally going to turn my brain off completely.
I don't have to ask you how was your day when you walk in. Because I do that because I want to look like I'm conversing. But really, I'm in the middle of this email. You've just walked in at 3:30. I'm only like halfway through my day.
Yeah.
How was your day? Are you all right? How are you feeling? I don't have to think about it, right? And I love him, but I don't have to think about it. Yeah. Also, like yesterday, my lunch was an omelette, a kiwi, and some goat's cheese.
Sure.
Why not?
Yeah.
But when he says, like, should we have salmon and asparagus?
Throw some hula hoops in there. Oh, my God. Honestly, get really loose.
Yeah. Exactly. So, like, that week, I mean, I'm going to miss him, but, like, just having some time out. And I was thinking about going to see my mum and spending some time there, but I'm like, no, I need it. I need a reset week.
Well done for making that.
Let's see if I stick to it. Yeah. I'm me, right? So who knows?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's been such a good chat.
I knew it wasn't going to be a quiet chat.
No, it's going to be fun. We knew
any need for prompts in this. No. It's going to flow. We have. So yeah, thank you so much.
No, thank you for having me. Yeah.